Good morning, and with the help you get from Dan Burns, ASE Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul, he's going to help you out, especially if you do have to take your vehicle in to your favorite dealer, your favorite shop for a little bit of service. He might give you an idea of what could be ailing that car, truck, or van. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Nice to see you again.
Good to be here.
We were visiting that beautiful Grand Avenue. And had chance, whether you were changing oil, Tony and I went and had some breakfast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a little coffee.
That's lots of options.
A lot of options on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Just a great avenue.
Yeah. We purposely built our waiting room a little bit small because I think people can have better options to go somewhere and have a cup of coffee or a snack or whatever. And you don't need to. As hard as we try, the shop is still smells like a car shop.
So. Of course. Yeah, as it should.
That's the way it is.
Yeah, well, you got great people that work at the front desk, too.
Oh, thank you.
They really, really are good folks. They're all good folks.
Yeah.
But if you have a problem with your vehicle, you want to call Dan today or text Dan, let me give you the people are doing both, as a matter of fact, right now. 651-989-9226. That's the phone number. Or if it's easier, send Dan a text like some folks are doing, 81807. We've got some other text messages, Dan, that were kind of left over from last week. In fact, the last couple of weeks, I think. Here's a Saab 9000 leaking antifreeze through the air vent that provides heat to the back seat. The antifreeze ends up on the back seat floor. Any ideas?
Well, I don't know for sure, but there must be a little heater core back there or a... I think probably more likely a connection to a heater core.
Probably.
That's probably leaking. And if there's coolant dripping, there has to be coolant flow back there. So it would require taking that center console apart and seeing where the heater core is. Where I would start actually is look it up in the manual or in online and find out where exactly that is and figure out how to gain access to it. But I'm sure that it... it's probably a connection that is leaking there.
Texter wants to know, is it possible to add an aftermarket auto lift gate to a 2013 Chevy Traverse?
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised that there is a way if you search that online. And it's, you know, I don't know how complicated it would be based on how the original equipment lift gate is engineered. I would think it'd be a little bit complicated
to
try and replace or try and put an aftermarket one in.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, let's go to the phones. Folks have been waiting there. Let's see who's first. Pete in Lakeville. Good morning, Pete. You're on with Dan.
Yes, good morning, Denny and Dan. I have a question about it. My wife has a 99 Honda Prelude with just under 100,000 miles, and it's her baby. But for several years now, when it gets cold, the brake light comes on the dash, and as the car is driven, it goes out. There's been no problem with the brakes, and we just recently had a brake flush, and it still does it on cold days. And we're just wondering... what could possibly be the problem?
Well, on an older car like that, I think the only two things that can make that brake light come on are if it's the red brake light, is the parking brake assembly, and there's a switch in there that causes that to come on, or if the brake fluid is low and there's a switch that causes that to come on, either of which could be affected by the cold weather. And so... what I would do is disconnect one or both of them and the switches. Either disconnect them or run a jumper wire between them to shut the light off and then see if that solves the problem. And then plug one back in and see if it happens again. But I think bypass those two switches and see if that doesn't solve the problem. And I'm sure it will. I'm just not sure which one it is.
Would you guess that it's safe to drive, though?
Oh, I'm sure it's safe to drive. It just had the brake fluid flush, so I think more likely it's probably the parking brake switch that's out of adjustment a little bit or the parking brake's not releasing completely. and causing the light to come on.
Interesting.
You add a little bit of temperature. You add cold or hot weather to anything, and you don't think that anything moves, but it absolutely does. The metal moves, plastic moves, it all moves when you heat or cool it.
Yeah,
so it changes things.
Thanks for calling, Pete. Appreciate it. Pete leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. Scott, next up here from Ham Lake. Scott, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Morning. I got a 2012 Chevy Silverado, and the other day when I was going down the road, I turned the defrosters on, and I couldn't control the heat on the defrosters. It just got hotter and hotter and hotter. Wanted to know what that might be.
Well, on a 2012, those blend doors, the temperature control is controlled by doors in the heater box that are controlled by little electric servo motors. And either your little electric servo motor is no longer working, it's stuck in the full hot position, or the door itself has broken inside there and is not allowing the servo motor to actually move the blend door. But at any rate, if I was to, or if you were to take it into your shop and have them check the computer controls on your heating and air, they can watch all those doors. They can watch the servo motor, see if they're moving. And in fact, if something is not moving properly, there's a good chance that there's a code stored in there, a diagnostic code stored in there that they can follow, and it'll give them the information as to what's not working. But I've seen both are actually pretty common, where either the motor will fail or the door itself will be broken. You should hope for the motor. That's what you want. That's easy to fix. It's on the outside of that heater box. If the door itself is actually broken, that's inside the heater box, and that gets pretty expensive to repair.
Mm. Not good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck, Scott. Before we break, Al is calling in from Lionel Lakes, I believe. Hi, Al. What's your question, please?
Yeah, I got a question on a 09 Mercury Milan. I bought it, and it was probably from an auction car. I got it from the dealer, and it had a shake when it got up to 40, 50, and it felt like the tires. And it was an all-wheel drive, and they have two different sets of tires on it. So I figured it was that, and they were brand new tires and brand new brakes. So I thought, go for it. And when my auto guy was looking at when I took it in, he said, "Well, the U-joint is bad, and that's probably what the shake is." And the front. Then when they were changing that, they said the front arms differential were bad, and I thought, replace that because it's for my daughter. And then I got three new tires to match the one brand new tire on there, because I heard all-wheel drive has to be all the same tires, and it still was shaking. So then he said the drive shaft was out of balance. And I took that out and said, yep, that was way out of balance, and put that back in. And it was better, but when it gets up to 50 and 60, now it still shakes some again.
Yeah, did they put a new drive shaft in or just have it balanced?
They had it balanced.
Yeah. I think the wiser thing would have probably been to actually replace that drive shaft, because that's where, as you were telling this story, that's my first thought, is there something wrong with the drive shaft in the drive train? When we test drive a car and there's a shake, if it's in the drive shaft versus a wheel, it's much faster. And a professional drive in the car would be able to tell you, well, that's either it's coming from the wheel, it's a wheel speed, or it's a drivetrain speed. And, if it's a drivetrain, and it sounds like that's what they're chasing is drivetrain. So I think that's it. But I think as the fact that it changed it, made it better, it's not always just that the drive shaft is out of balance. There can also be there's a whole bunch of moving parts that move very, very fast. And if one of those moving parts has a little glitch in it, and it doesn't take much, because as you're going fast, it really accentuates the shake. But at any rate, I think that you probably should ask them if it's not a good idea to replace that drive shaft instead of just having it rebalanced.
Okay. That's an answer. Good luck, Al. Thank you. Sharon, you'll be next. We have to take a break, quick break. We'll be right back with more of CCO's Car Care Show. And welcome back to our Car Care Show. Denny Long here with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive, which is located exactly where in Grant?
We are at 982 Grand Avenue, right between Lexington and Victoria on Grand Avenue, right just very close to the governor's mansion.
Well, that is true.
In fact, we work on their cars. We fix
you do?
Their cars for them.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway.
Keep the government running in
keep
that
the government
case.
Running. That's right. Yeah. So anyway, you can find us on the web at lloydsautomotive.net, L-L-O-Y-D-S, lloydsautomotive.net. Or give us a call this morning. Jim will be there at 651-228-1316.
Very good. 651-989-9226. There's a line open for your car care question for Dan. Otherwise, send a text like some folks are doing, 81807. Text came in earlier, Dan, and I know we've touched on this over the years, but the listener wants you to explain the difference between gasoline. Summer blends, winter blends. What's the difference?
Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, I do. I have known exactly, but I don't remember anymore. But it has to do with the amount of alcohol, of ethanol that they put into our gas. And in Minnesota, it's mandated, but I guess it's not mandated because you can buy gas without ethanol.
That's
in it.
True.
If you look around, and as we've heard from our listeners, I guess it's actually pretty readily available, the gas without alcohol or without ethanol. But at any rate, they put it in because for several reasons. One is it's certainly farm friendly to do that, to use our corn product for alcohol or alcohol. But also, it's much cheaper. It's much less expensive to blend some alcohol into the gas, and it works. It works just fine. The alcohol does not have quite as much energy as petroleum gasoline, but the difference between summer and winter is that in the winter they put a little bit more in.
Oh,
in the summer heat, there can be a problem with, especially on older cars, where the alcohol will actually boil and cause a vapor problem in the fuel system. Now, on newer cars, and on most newer cars, the fuel pressure is so high that it really doesn't, there's not much chance of it boiling because you're raising the boiling point. But in hot weather, it did have an effect. So in the winter, they put more alcohol in than in the summertime.
Does that help keep it from, some folks used to put in heat in their gas tanks.
Some people still do.
Oh, really? But you don't really have to do that with the ethanol.
It's for sure double dipping. It's exactly the same thing that they would be adding in. And the reason that you would put alcohol in your gas back in the old days was that in case there was any moisture in your tank or in the gas that you bought from the gas station, the alcohol will surround that, will mix with the water, and it'll actually cause a burn through the system.
Oh, okay.
Burn through the car. And
get
so it takes the water out.
Interesting.
And but nowadays, there's alcohol in there already, so you don't really need to add any more alcohol to it.
Back to the phones we go. Let's see who's been waiting. Neil has been waiting there in Inver Grove. Neil, you're on the CCO with Dan.
I have a 98 Ford Ranger with 139,000 miles on it, and when I start the car, when I go out in the morning and start the car, it starts instantly like normal cars do. Then I drive about 6 miles, and I leave it parked for 2 hours. When I come out, it grinds for 2 or 3 seconds, and you don't know if it's going to start or not. And then it kind of gets started, but you can see it. I don't know how to say it, but it runs a little goofy for a second or two.
It chugs. It starts like it's flooded, I'll bet. And if you give it, I would bet that when it goes to start that second time, it seems like it's flooded a little bit. Is that true? You have to
I guess that I don't know, because that's what I was wondering. Should I pump the gas or not pump the gas? Or it actually, when it starts, it seems like it is flooded because it kind of, I don't know how to say it, takes it a while to level out a little bit.
Yeah, right. Yes. Well, that's the short-term answer is yes. You should, when you're starting it that second time, put your foot on the gas and press it just a little bit. And this will actually be a test. that you can tell your mechanic about. Tell him that if you put your foot on the gas and go to start it, it starts just fine. And by putting your foot on the gas, what you're really doing, you're not giving it more gas. What you're really doing is giving it more air. And by giving it more air, it'll start much better. Your mechanic will want to know that, because I think what's probably wrong with it, it has a ruptured fuel pressure regulator. And when you start the car the first time in the morning, it's been sitting long enough that all the gas in the system has evaporated and it starts just fine. When you let it sit for just 10 or minutes or less than an hour and go to restart it, that gas has leaked through the fuel pressure regulator into the intake part, the air part of the vehicle. And when you go to start it, it really is flooded. There's too much gas there. So you need to get that little leak fixed. And it's a relatively inexpensive thing to do. But that would be a great test if you could tell your mechanic that, yes, it makes a difference. When I just put my foot on the throttle halfway, it starts right up. He'd want to know that.
All right. Thank you very much. We have to take a quick break. We have more callers to take care of, so those folks on the line don't go away, and we have more text messages to answer as well. And good morning. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Danny Long here with Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, answering your questions, as usual, by phone and by text, and we have both, Dan. So let's put you back to work here. Who has been waiting? It will be Ken, who's calling from Wyoming. Go ahead, Ken. Thank you.
Hi, Ken, or hi, Dan. I'm replacing a motor in a 2008 HHR. I unfortunately lost a timing chain in it. I picked up a really good low-mile donor from another 2008 HHR. Now, mine was a 2.2. I'm replacing it with a 2.4, and I'm using all the computer modules from the 2.4 donor car. Do you foresee any problems that I'm going to have with the programming and whatnot there?
No, I think that, my brain is slow, of course, slower than it used to be, so it takes me a little bit of time to process all that, because there's a lot going on there by switching modules.
Motor and modules, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but that's old enough, the fact that it's an HHR, that I don't know that all of the computers on the car are, if they run on the same data bus line.
Correct.
If they do, you're going to have trouble. If they don't, and I don't think they do, then the powertrain computer will stand alone, and I think you'll probably be just fine.
All right, that sounds that. Really good.
Yeah. The only other thing is does it all bolt up correctly? That, you know, does it mount into the transmission, and are you putting the transmission into, or just the engine?
Just the motor on that. And you know, I have the other motor out now. I'm looking at both of them. They're identical except for the variable timing chain that's on the 2.4.
Right.
So that's why I'm going with the computer from the donor also.
Yeah. The other thing that I would recommend that you do is, you know, do a web search on that, because there's a whole bunch of chat lines out there on people that have done this before or attempted to do it before, and you'll get some great advice from there. I'm just, you know, I don't know either of those specifically or well enough to know that, oh, yeah, that will work. It's perfect. And it's, you know, some people might even say, hey, it's a great idea that 2.4 is a better motor anyway, so... but I don't know all that. So I would do a little bit more research on the web and see what you find about that. But I think it's old enough that you'll be fine.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Ken. See who's next. Paul is calling from West St. Paul, I believe. Paul, you're on CCO with Dan.
Good morning, Dan and Danny. Dan, I got a 2013 GMC pickup, and I was driving to my daughter's home this morning, coming up 35E. And all of a sudden, the bells and whistles start going off, saying my oil pressure was low, and to stop the engine. And I got an analog gauge, and sure enough, it's on zero. So I pull over, shut the truck off, crawl underneath the truck. The oil filter's dry, the drain plug's dry, and there's oil in the engine. I mean, it's on the dipstick, you know, where it should be. Jump back in the truck, start it up. everything seems fine. The oil pressure gauge goes up where it should be. Continue on my destination. Now I pulled on city streets getting closer to my daughter's home, and then as the truck is driving slower, you know, the oil pressure gauge goes down, and then now the engine light came on, mm-hmm. you know, just a little icon. So I was just wondering your thoughts on what might be going on here.
Well, what I hope it is for you is that it's a sensor problem, that it's not reading accurately, which is possible. The process for us would be, if it was at our shop, would be that we would remove the electronic sensor that's screwed into the side of the engine block and put in a mechanical gauge, and then do the same drive and see if the pressure truly is going away. If the pressure truly is going away, then we've got some mechanical work in the engine to figure out. But if the pressure is not going away, and one question I should ask you: did you hear any noise from the engine when there was no oil pressure?
Not everything sounds normal.
Sounds great, yeah. So and that's good news. So I think more likely you've got a bad sensor, something that's not reading correctly. But to be safe, you still want to put a mechanical gauge on it. Take it for a drive. Be sure that the fuel pressure or the oil pressure is staying good. If it is, then as long as you have that oil pressure sensor out, simply replace it. Put a new one in. See if that takes care of it. And it probably will. If it doesn't, then you've got something going on in the dash that needs some attention. But the gauge, you know, that sensor is cheap enough that if you do have good pressure, and I think you probably do, then just put a new sensor in and see if that takes care of it. I bet it will.
All right. Good luck, Paul. Thank you. I don't want to forget our texters either, Dan. Here is one, a 2008 Caravan, 60,000 miles. He or she is telling us an error code, P0404, every 500 miles resets. Could it be EGR valve? It's a one-year-old EGR valve. Could that be the cause?
Probably not. I'm not sure exactly what that code stands for, but I would guess it's EGR flow. And if it is EGR flow, then more likely what's happened is the tube, that the part or the tubes that the EGR air flows through have gotten partially restricted with carbon and so forth, and that probably needs to be cleaned out.
Uh-huh.
And maybe the EGR took care of it last time and got you some more time by changing that. But I think probably what's happening is you have a poor flow of air through those tubes, and that's the sensor's not happy with that. And so because the sensor's not happy with that, it thinks the EGR is not opening at all. And it may very well be. So, but at any rate, take the EGR off, see if it's full of carbon in there. If it is, it needs to all be cleaned out of there.
Okay. Let's see. Here's another text. Have a 2005 F-150, about 115,000 miles. The four-wheel drive abruptly stopped working. The light comes on, but it does not engage. Any suggestions?
Yeah, there's a little electric motor down on the there's a couple of them, actually, on the transfer case and on the front differential. And I would guess one of those motors has failed. They're very common. It's a very common failure on those Fords. So check those. It's if you take it into your shop, it's an easy thing to check to see if it's actually moving when you shift it into four-wheel drive. It's an electric motor. And if it's not moving, then you need to replace it, and I'll take care of it for you.
Okay. Here's a text. I know we have to run pretty quickly here. 2001 Toyota Prius Hybrid, 328,000 miles.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Drives fine. Then while driving, engine appears to rev up and won't calm down until I pull over and shut off the engine. After that, it's fine for a while. I think we had this question before.
Yeah, and I don't know what I said before, but this time I'll say I think you have a computer control problem. Something in the computer system is causing it to do that. And if you take it into your shop, there'll be some data stored in there that will give them some information as to where the problem is and what to do about it.
All right, for those texters that did not get in today, Dan, I'll again save those for next week.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Now, for those that want to get over there to Lloyd's and get some business taken care of with their vehicle, how do we do that?
Well, come on over. We are at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul, right between Lexington and Victoria. You can find us on the web at LloydsAutomotive.net, L-L-O-I-D-S, LloydsAutomotive.net, or give us a call, 651-228-1316.
Good deal. You're going to be back with us next week?
I will be, yeah.
Good deal. All right. Have a good week, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan Burns from Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul.